RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Thursday morning at RCR is our Money Talks morning, and Simon Angelo from Wealth Morning is back with us on Money Talks. How are you doing, Simon? Good to have you back.
I'm doing really well, Paul. It's great to be back with you and to be speaking to your esteemed listeners again.
Oh, yes. Research has shown, that's me asking around, by the way, that our listeners are the smartest listeners in New Zealand radio land. It's official now that I've just said it.
It's a real privilege to speak with them. And from what I've heard, those listeners are growing by the day. So that
they are.
It's good news. They are.
Okay, so where do you want to start? September. I remember last time we chatted and you sort of highlighted September as historically a down month for stock markets.
Yes.
Did it turn out to be that way?
No, this September took us completely by surprise. September is normally a down month. The average drawdown since the 1940s is about negative 0.7%. So often it does sort of feel like a beached whale with a guy holding his hose over it to try and keep it going.
What a vision. Yeah, well put.
Not this September, Paul, not this September at all. On the 18th September, my birthday, I got a early present from the US Federal Reserve, a 50 basis point cut.
Yes.
For our wholesale clients, we ended up 3.5% up over the month. It was quite a weird thing when the cut went through, because the first reaction, you know, the market is often like sheep. They scatter and wonder what the heck's going on. Mm. And I actually think a lot of analysts and traders thought, wow, that's the biggest cut since 2008, since the GFC. He must know something we don't. There's a major recession. And there was actually a little bit of a sell-off. And then, of course, they were completely wrong, because last quarter the US economy had grown 3%, and it was just really righting the ship. And it was a great time to have that little window to buy, and then the market really started moving.
Okay, so timing is everything again.
Timing is everything, but I think it's also psychology and attitude and doing your homework and being brave. I mean, there's that old saying, a lion doesn't concern itself with the opinion of sheep. If you've got strong conviction in what you're doing, you're the lion, you can go hunting in the markets, and it's the sheep scattering that'll give you opportunity. I mean, October's showing a little bit more volatility with the Middle East situation, but I would just say to listeners, particularly listeners who are investors, follow the money. The biggest economy in the Middle East is not the participants involved in this conflict, it's Saudi Arabia. Mm. And they are pushing a lot of money into global stock markets as they prepare at some point for the end of oil. So, I mean, money likes to be massaged and given champagne, and that's where it goes.
Yeah, they've got a lot of it too, Saudi Arabia, right? They've built up 100 years' worth of petro earnings. So they're full of cash, are they?
They have built up a large sovereign wealth fund, I believe, and now they're looking for ways to deploy that. But, I mean, what we're seeing here is more liquidity coming into the market. And I think some commentators on Twitter have noticed that the Fed's added $2.6 billion of emergency liquidity. So the Fed, of course, is the lender of last resort. I don't see anything to be alarmed by the extra liquidity that they're adding, because what happens is when you cut interest rates, you're going to get a rotation out of banks, out of money market funds, into risk assets like stocks. So it's just important to have that liquidity there, I think, for the banks. And there are 4,577 banks in the US.
Okay.
So at any one time, there'll be some small regional bank that's maybe overstretched a little bit and needs some help. And just because a tree falls in the forest and no one hears it, does it still make a sound? You've got to ask yourself that question. But the Fed is there as the lender of last resort. And we did see last year when Silicon Valley Bank got into trouble, they were able to reinstate the deposits in other banks quite quickly. So it's quite a robust system. But all this liquidity does present opportunities.
$2.9 billion, did you say? That's not even very much money in the scheme of things anyway, is it?
$2.6 billion we saw added.
But that's not much, is it? They burned through that.
Well, the overall assets of the Fed are about $7.1 trillion. So in the greater scheme of things, it's nothing to really have to call out, I don't think.
And that interest rate cut from the Fed, is that what you anticipated, the level of it, the size of it?
Well, it's interesting. At the trading desk, John and I had a bit of a discussion, and I said, I think he's going to let things out gently. It's going to be 25, and 50, he obviously had the bazooka out, and maybe he thought, well, we've come a little bit late to the party. Let's give them a big one now. But what, of course, all the traders are looking forward to is that real sweet spot where you've got a big economy that's having a soft landing. It's just gently bedding down to a good level of activity, lower interest rates, good growth, and good escalation in stock prices, particularly some of those stocks that have been sitting at value.
Right. What about China and also war? Because that's on the radar now. Well, it was anyway, but it's way more on the radar now. So do you want to talk about those particular things?
Well, let's talk about China first. I always think you want to add oil to your car before it starts smoking. And that economy's been in trouble a while. And it seems to me the stimulus that they've added, while it's large and welcome, it's possibly a little bit late. It amounts to over $100 billion, and it essentially means a mortgage cut of about 50 basis points, 0.5%. So for the moment, it's reinvigorated Chinese stock markets and the Chinese property market. Now, that property market is absolutely vital down this end of the world to Australia. China buys 75% of the global seaborne iron ore.
Right.
And most of that
goes
into their overbuilding of apartments program. They build them, then they got too many, then they have to build some, and the cycle starts all over again. But very, very important for Australia, of course, because they sell 85% of their iron ore to Australia. And I think at one point, about a fifth of all corporate tax in Australia come from selling iron ore.
Well, to the Chinese. So they, for the Australians, this building cycle has to continue in China, right? It has to carry on.
Well, either that or the Australians need to find some other export sectors. Because, I mean, iron ore is very important. Of all the metals mined, it makes up about 90% of the metals mined.
Yeah, okay.
The Chinese property sector is... just produce huge demand for it. I mean, fortunately, with the iron ore producers, they have great margins. I mean, they can get iron ore out of the ground for $20 or $30. And at one stage, they were selling it for $110. It was falling fast. And this new stimulus has really given it a boost. But look, I prefer, I mean, this is not advice at all because we're all different, but I personally prefer to put my money into copper because regardless of China, I can see the copper producers doing really, really well because you've got so many tailwinds. I mean, an EV needs three times as much copper. Smartphones, infrastructure, 5G, they all need copper. Printed circuit boards. I mean, people are changing their smartphones these days like underwear. All needs copper.
Maybe they change their smartphones. Maybe they're changing their phones more than they change their underwear now. Who knows? They're really going through them quick, aren't they? Okay, so copper, right. And the extraction cost of copper, probably more expensive than iron ore, but yeah.
Okay. Well, that creates opportunity. I think there is the Bank of America's, one of their studies that come out is pointing to there being a 15% shortfall in terms of demand over supply for copper. A friend of mine, his investor I talk to about once a week, his father first got into copper mines in the 1980s, investing in copper stocks. And he was faced with a situation where he was down to about his last £5,000 and had no plans for retirement. £5,000 in 1980 is about $50,000.
Okay.
He was approaching retirement, no plans to cover that retirement at all. So he started looking around, well, where am I going to invest? He found a little copper company in Chile, went out to visit the company and the founding family, invested in that company on the London Stock Exchange. 20 years later, that holding was worth over 2 million New Zealand dollars.
Bingo.
Backed himself, right company, right metal at the right time, and it produced huge dividends.
We don't have copper here, do we, in any sort of quantity? In little NZ, do we?
Not that I know of, but there is significant gold deposits, and often where there is gold, there's copper.
Ah, right. Okay. Yeah. Well, we should be digging up the gold. I know we're going to get to gold, but we should be where it's doable. We should be digging up the gold and putting it in a vault for all New Zealanders, shouldn't we?
Well, yes, and selling it on the gold spot, the global markets.
Yeah.
Would be another string to our bow, definitely.
We are doing quite a series on CBDCs here at RCR at the moment, and it's bigger than just what's on the radio. It's also out on social media. Alistair Harding has made a video series as well. People will have seen that on social media and around the traps. But here's a question. Why is the Reserve Bank pushing a digital dollar with our money when what we really need is more banking competition? Do you want to speak to that?
Yes, absolutely, Paul. I mean, thank you to Alistair Harding. I first appeared on his CBD series, and he really woke me up to some of the problems that CBDCs pose. I mean, I've come to the view that they present clear and present danger to the banking industry.
Right, yep.
And I essentially don't think they're a good idea. I mean, we've had demarcation in banking since 1397. I'm not sure why our Reserve Bank is pushing along with them. I mean, I guess almost every other country is, though a few have stepped back from the brink. It's a bit like, you know, your kids need healthy fruit and you decide to give them a strawberry vape.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, that's right. But it's not about, well, it depends on how you think about this, but it's more about a control, isn't it? A mechanism of control, more than just your money, but through your money, how you live, what you purchase, even down to the food potentially you can buy. So if you think about it as a control mechanism, it kind of makes more sense to me anyway.
Yeah, I'm not entirely at that point yet because they've promised that it would never be used as a point of control. Well, at least perhaps until another emergency event like a pandemic rolls around. But that's the initial starting point. My main immediate issue with it is just the impact on banks. And if you look at Germany, they actually did a study there on the potential impact of the digital euro. So the Federal Association of German Community Banks found that with the advent of a digital euro, if most Germans moved 3,000 euros out of their banks into the digital euro, about 650 banks would be in trouble.
Whoa. Okay. Yeah.
Now, we need to back a bit and just say, well, there's over 1,400 banks in Germany, and they've been absolutely essential to the export success of that country. So in Germany, you have the Mittelstand, which is these sort of small and medium innovative businesses, and they depend on banks to finance them. Now, the banks are quite different than, say, in New Zealand. I don't know about your suburb, Paul, but there's no banks left in mine.
No, there's an ATM, a smart ATM. That's it.
Well, they even moved the ATM, ASB Devonport. That's gone. Right. There's just three or four real estate offices with lots of property porn.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Got that here too.
Yeah.
But look,
wow. Yep.
With Germany, I mean, 1,400 banks, and often these are small banks. I mean, I don't know if you saw the movie The Bank of Dave.
No, I haven't, but I've heard of it.
So great documentary that your viewers can also find on YouTube. Just look up The Bank of Dave. And he's trying to get more banking competition in Britain. He's a guy who left school at 16, no qualifications, become a multimillionaire from a minivan business. People were always asking him for a loan. So he says, I want to start a bank. First retail banking application for 100 years in the UK.
Gosh, 100 years.
Anyway, he went to Germany and he met just a husband and wife team that it seemed running a small bank, just one counter, couple of people in the back office, keeping local German businesses going. And I mean, my view is strongly, we need more banks. We need less regulation. Banks are the center of the economy, and we don't need a CBDC burning them off. And what a lot of the surveys in Germany seem to show is people didn't actually want a CBDC. They were actually nervous of it and were upping their holdings of cash to try and protect themselves. But being part of the EU, they've probably got no choice because the ECB is working on the digital euro. And where our Reserve Bank, I believe, is now working on the digital New Zealand dollar, whereas I think what we really need is maybe a deposit insurance scheme, which is meant to be coming in next year, and just less regulation so we can have more banks lending to Kiwi businesses and driving this economy forward.
So if there was less regulation, and because the bar is pretty high for being a bank, right, you know, do you think that people would or operations would come in and fill the opportunities, do you think, even in a small economy like ours?
Well, there are a few businesses already there that are wanting to increase their banking operations. I haven't looked in great detail, but look at the Dosh business. One stage they were looking into banking, but it's just too hard. And I mean, the Commerce Commission has also said, you know, there's a problem with not enough banking competition in New Zealand. Well, we're faced with too much regulation. Why not, instead of looking at a CBDC, actually allow more banks to lend to local communities? And it seems Kiwi Bank may well be sold at some point, and we'll have even less. We'll have these large Australian banks with elite people running them, speaking from the pulpit of truth about their capital gains tax needs.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And maybe we could talk about capital gains tax. I don't know if we've got time to do it now, but that's certainly a debate that's going on. And the lefty media's, you know, having a go at the Prime Minister and everything about his wealth, which is all, I think, attached to political positioning on that. So maybe next chat we can talk about that, go through the pros and the cons. But what about gold? Because, again, I'm thinking with wars, missiles, hypersonic missiles flying around, and the destabilizing effect that can have, that puts gold in more of a powerful position, doesn't it? I'm assuming, but what do I know?
Well, between 2014 and now, gold's up 185%. And when you add more liquidity and you have more geopolitical risk, a lot of people do tend to go to gold, and it gets a bit. Now, I think when we're talking about gold and comparative investments, I mean, I do need to say nothing we say here is financial advice, because everybody's hugely different. I mean, we've got Chris Luxon and we've got Tory Farnell. Huge different ends of how people use and invest and think about
spend money.
Yeah. Clearly.
Yeah.
But what I would say is I personally hold very little gold, and I agree with Warren Buffett that gold is for people who want to go long on fear. They constantly believe the world is in peril. I think the world has always been in peril. I think we're healthier and living longer and happier than we've ever been. I think the world's in less peril than ever before. And personally, I don't put a lot of money or spend a lot of time on gold. And I think the problem that gold investors have, and it's a very, very big problem, is they miss out on the eighth wonder of the world. So the eighth wonder of the world is compounding.
Ah, yep. I understand that.
Yep. You understand compounding?
Yep.
So I've got some numbers for your listeners, Paul. I'll go back to about four great-grandpas. My great-great-great-grandpa living in Italy in 1802. You might like to think of your own great-grandpa. Where was he?
Thames, I think, in New Zealand.
Wow. Okay.
Yep.
Well, anyway, back in Italy, if I gave my great-grandpa $1 in 1802 and he decided to hang on to that dollar and pass it down my family and I had his dollar today, it'd only be worth 4 cents.
Right. Okay.
Now, then if he got a bit smarter and said, no, I'm going to put that dollar into gold, he passed that gold down to the generations, to my family coming out to Queensland, I ended up with his $1 of gold, that would be worth $4 today.
Okay.
And that's adjusted for inflation. That's the
right.
real rate.
Not spectacular, now, no.
Not spectacular, but healthy. Healthy. He's been maintained the wealth to some degree. Now, here's the real kicker. Based on this chart by Jeremy Segal, if he'd invested in stocks and he'd compounded the dividends from that dollar, I today, Simon Angelo in New Zealand, 24 years later, would have $2.3 million.
Whoa. Okay. The power of compounding. Yeah.
It's the power of compounding and it's the power of investing in productive assets.
Yeah. That's phenomenal.
It's absolutely phenomenal. And we're looking at the exact same thing with a company in Australia we invest in. They just own farmland and they lease it out. They're on the Australian Stock Exchange. So since 2014 through today, the stock price has performed exactly the same as gold. Gold's up 185%. Their stock price is up 185%. So if you'd put 500 grand in both of them and just got the capital gain, you'd have about 900K today, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
But here's the eighth wonder of the world. They pay a dividend. The farmland company's been paying a dividend of between 5 and 6%. So if you'd reinvested and compounded that dividend, here's the magic, Paul, you'd have about 3 million as opposed to your 900K.
Over what period of time again?
2014 to about where we are today in 2024. A decade, basically.
Yeah, only just. Wow. Okay, I get it. We get it.
But, of course, you've got to have the mentality when you invest in productive assets, you're buying businesses, and every business has risk. So I'm investing in a lot of banking businesses around the world, which I love because they're the center of the economy. And now CBDCs are coming along. So there's always something.
Yeah. Well, that's why there are people like you. So people like me can go, Simon, make it happen for me, please.
Well, I'm excited that everybody gets this knowledge of how to invest. And just the one thing I keep coming back to is, those who do best in markets are those who are prepared to sacrifice, maybe have leaner times now to have those good times in the future.
Yeah. Delay gratification, which is hard for humans.
Yeah, it is. Yep. So those guys who can sit and look at the marshmallow rather than chomp it down, if you remember that test, they do tend to do well and it is tough. But I think the hardest part is just having courage, especially when the world's in peril.
And
so much media now, it's constantly on your screen and on your phone. The world's constantly in peril.
Yeah, it's a fear porn sort of environment we're in. But we have you, Simon, to remind us that it's never been better.
Well, I'm feeling pretty good now, Paul, because we've been up in September. But look, ask me again when we get a really dark month. And even I'm sweating. It does affect us all. Nobody's immune from, big falls in the market and things really, really going bad.
Yep, no, I hear you. Hey, if people want to get in contact, Simon, what's the best way?
Jump on our website at wealthmorning.com. You can get John's free book on how the bricks might affect your wealth. And if you're in Auckland, you can sign up to our Coffee and Capital event and come and have lunch and a cappuccino and hear more about what we're seeing in the markets for wholesale investors.
Always good to hear what you have to say, Simon. Thanks for coming on Money Talks again. And we're talking about, I don't know, 3 weeks a month again. And we'll see how things are then.
It's always moving. Wonderful to talk to you, Paul.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.